I want to go to the beach. Stop bothering me, Bears.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 12th of December, 2013, from the sprawling but politically correct Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee. And entering stage left from Houston, Texas, please welcome the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Barris Bartlett.
In person. Well, you know.
Live.
With you in Houston and me in Nashville.
Well, I got a confession to make, Barris.
You got a lot of confessions to make. You just don't publicize them usually. What's this one that you want to go viral with?
Well, I'm not in Houston.
You're not?
No.
Where are you?
It's warm, and that's all I'm saying. No, I got, early winter blues, and it's Houston is my place. Everybody knows Houston is my place, and it's where, you know, the cold weather stops in Dallas, Fort Worth, and doesn't come any further south. This year, everybody across the nation knows that story is completely different. So I've got friends in low places, low enough to where it's 82 degrees. Yay.
Oh, yeah, really. And here I am. So I woke up this morning to covering a beautiful white snow, a blanket of snow on the ground, and the sun is shining like there's no tomorrow. And what is it? It's so gorgeous. It's almost like Christmas cardish when you've got the sun out and the snow on the ground. It's gorgeous.
Oh, I remember those Tennessee days. Yeah, that is beautiful. It seems that everyone I talk to is looking at snow except for me.
Bah, humbug. Well, here's to you living in the sun.
And on the sand and on the beach and, oh, gosh, yes. My bones are getting warmer.
I didn't get a couple of stories this week.
You didn't?
No. No, got none.
Oh, well. I guess I'll talk to you next week then, eh?
Shall I play the music or should we just go straight to the outro?
play the intro and the outro. And then I got to get back to the beach. Come on, let's get this going.
Yeah. Oh, this is the way I can hurt you. Okay. Yeah, good, good. Hey, this week I read a story entitled How Religious Are Australians?
And Where did you find that?
This was by Dr. Ruth Powell, Director of National Church Life Survey Research in Australia. And she said, how do you know whether people are religious? There are three ways that you know: belonging, believing, and behaving. Now, believing, what she meant by that was belief in the existence of God or a higher power. For belonging, she said it was religious identification, who you identify with. And in behaving, this was the one that got my attention. A third way that people express being religious is through their religious practices. Okay? This can be either public or private, such as personal prayer, meditation, and other devotional practices. And then she says this, the most obvious measure of public religious practice is church attendance and is commonly used by researchers. So the three things that she used to identify people who are religious, and generally when we say people are religious, we're saying they're morally good. There is a goodness about them, or there is a level of morality or ethics that is above, say, people who don't have religion, particularly people who don't have religion. Those are dirty, unwashed masses. And this woman says the three ways of gauging it is belonging, believing, and behaving. That sounds a lot like what I call tribalism. What do you think, Michael?
Well, maybe people in the Gospel Revolution would pass the test of not being religious, because the best I know, most of them don't belong to anything. And I know none of them behave. That's for sure. There's just no qualification for behaving whatsoever.
Talk about
if they do behave, it's for other reasons other than pleasing God. And then, as far as believing, goodness gracious, we've left all of that up to Jesus. So it seems as though, based on the research that your friend there in Australia has done, the one thing I can conclude is that the gospel leaves you without religion.
Now, mate, we're in your hands. I hope you got something interesting to say.
Absolutely nothing. I want to go to the beach.
Behave yourself, or you won't get any supper.
I believe I want to go to the beach, so I've got to behave so I can belong and go to the beach.
Good. Would you like me to buy you a little pushy boat and a beach ball?
A pushy boat? What is a pushy boat? I've never heard such a term in my entire life. A pushy boat. That's got to be so Aussie. What is that?
It'll go with your water wings.
Ah, okay.
We'll give you a little plastic boat to push around.
Everyone needs one of those. But since our last two PowerCasts, the thing that's really been on my mind a great deal is this acceleration of reality of God and man being one. I don't think we will ever be able to exhaust this, because, Bears, if we truly accept that God and man are one, virtually everything about Christianity is a complete antithesis to that understanding. Everything I can find out about Christianity is that it is active in people's lives to try to close this gap between God and man, either through believing, obeying,
belonging,
or belonging. Somehow, believing and belonging and obedience, as she said, that is what religion is. And all of those things, believing, belonging, and behaving, are attempts to close this gap between God and man.
Yeah, and it's got nothing to do with God. God's not doing any of that. I mean, God doesn't say, no. I think I belong to the Baptists this week. But
exactly.
It's all on our side, isn't it?
Exactly. And until we understand what he did and what his choices were, our choices become the things that religion are made of. Because God's choice was to tabernacle with man. God's choice was to move in. God's choice was to look at these unwashed masses, as you say, wash us, clean us, and move in and say, this is how I choose to express myself on planet Earth, is through mankind. That reality to me is just, I go to the grocery store. I drive through Burger King like I did this morning. And it really is amazing the attention that this has placed in me on people. And here's the question that I ask myself as I entertain people in my daily life, as far as just encountering people, not entertaining them. But the reality of, what does that look like? What does God in man look like? And then you get down to, what does God in an individual look like? What does that actually – is that measurable? Can you see that? Can you experience that? I know it's always been there. I have no reservations in telling anyone that my disconnect from Christianity has been one of the major catalysts for me connecting to the reality of the gospel. Our goal is to never offend anyone. But the issue of Christianity itself as a religion, not the Christians who tend to belong, believe, and I can never think of the last one.
Oh, behave. Yeah.
Behave. I keep thinking of obedience. But I didn't wake up one day and just chuck Christianity. I had to examine it closely. I had to sit and pick every flea off of this monkey that I could. Well, I did that to Christianity until I just got tired of picking fleas. It's like, you know, this is a flea bag. There's no cleaning up Christianity. I can't do it. I can't examine it close enough. I can't correct Christianity good enough. I can't alter it. I can't repackage it. I can't revamp it. I can't re-ante. I can't do it. And my only hope was to abandon Christianity. Here we are talking about Jesus, virgin birth, death on a cross, burial, resurrection, redemption, salvation, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, faith, patience, temperance. This is understandable to its greater extent outside of Christianity. If you ever want to misunderstand the virgin birth, understand it through the paradigm of Christianity. If you ever want to misunderstand the sacrifice of Jesus, view it through the paradigm of Christianity. If you ever want to dismiss the ultimate power of the resurrection in its fullness, view it through the paradigm of Christianity. You see, I know that people kind of they want us to not use that term. You know, don't come down on Christianity. But I can't, because when you realize that Christianity is a paradigm that distorts the gospel, I can't go easy on it. I can't. I would love to. I would love to say that there's this peaceful coexistence that I have found with Christianity, but I found out that God and man are one, Barris. And when that happened, I had to make a choice for myself.
You were talking earlier about how do you recognize that? How do you see God in people?
Yes.
How do you is that measurable? Is it something, well, you can even do?
Well, it is certainly something that I've become aware of. Now, and of course, this is it's not something totally brand new. I've been able to see God in the human race before, but now it is at such beautiful, everyday, identifiable measures.
Even so much I must be, can I still just be me?
I went to Publix yesterday, and I was picking out food from the deli, and they have all this wonderful, freshly prepared food. You get your little box, and then you put your food in it. But I thought I was going to have to get a different box for each item that I wanted. And she was saying, oh, now this is good, and this is not as good, and I said, oh, well, thank you. I said, well, do you have any other recommendations? And, oh, man, did she open up. And she said, oh, no, no. Says, use the same box. Says, they measure this by the pound. Says, you can put several items in one box. And then you close the lid, and I close the lid, and the lid wouldn't stay closed. So she said, right, there's the tape. And suddenly I began to have this feeling that I was having an encounter with God, that this kindness and the pleasant disposition of a total stranger. You know, I begin to feel that I'm entertaining angels unawares, because here's this stranger. You remember we went through some of that discussion, and I had this wonderful experience of like, man, this is kind of like that. This is like entertaining angels unawares, and here she is helping me in my lack of knowledge and my lack of ability to get through this without some instruction, which I would have goofed the whole thing up. But it was just for that moment. And it's like, okay, that's what God looks like in that moment. That's what he looks like. He looks like that in her, to the point to where that even me picking out and getting this right as far as walking through this little deli area, I'm getting help. Human beings, we have a great function about us, but man, I'm telling you, there is when I see kindness and all of these wonderful, you know, we've love, joy, peace, long suffering, gentleness, meekness, faith, patience, temperance, all of those things. When I see those things now, I'm beginning to identify God in the human race. And I know it sounds really, really silly, but that I encountered God at Publix walking through the lane there. But the more I become aware of that, the more I look for it, the more I probably express it myself, the more that it's actually a part of my daily experience.
Well, okay, that's how God looked like in a deli helper. What does he look like in someone you don't like? Do you not like anyone? Or?
Oh, I love everybody, Paris.
Oh, okay, so we can't go there.
Well, that's just the thing, is that there's people that know me that may not see God in me at all. Doesn't mean he's not there. The issue of working in conjunction with our humanness.
You mean our emotional warts and all?
Everything altogether.
All of our baggage?
Yes.
All of our emotional imbalance?
Yes.
All of our self-centeredness?
It's all there.
Is that all God? I never knew that. I could have been much more godly if I'd known that. I promise I could be really godly.
I think the thing that is God about that is that we have that as the contrast for what God really is. You know, there's so many examples that we have in the scriptures, the lion lying down with the lamb. And
that might happen, but I don't reckon the lamb will get very much sleep, frankly.
But, you know, being at peace with those contradictions and accepting these contradictions instead of fighting with them, and realizing that God chose to live in these vessels that by his standard have been perfected, but by human standards are very flawed. I know that's totally backward. Usually we would think that God would be the one finding the faults. But it really is the other way around. God doesn't find fault with us. He, by the work of the cross, decided, I can move in there. And not only am I going to move in there, I am going to be in the earth as I can be through these human vessels.
You remember that verse we used to use in the Word of Faith movement, talking about Jesus, as he was in the earth, so are we.
Yes, yes.
Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Absolutely. I think that really is the truth. But see, we got to look at it in the expanded version. You see, we looked at that only as us born-agains, us Christians. But this is God in the earth in all of humanity.
Standing up right before your eyes. say, every man's offense has been taken away. And why does it enrage you when I say, let's share love and peace and grace, or haven't you got any to give away? You have chosen to live blindly in lies, cause to see will cost you all you are. Blow your disguise. With unity they're springing up before your eyes. One man is standing up right before your eyes.
Gospel Revolution.
The wonderful thing about communication right now, we not only hear more about the bad that's going on around the earth, we also are hearing about the good that's going on around the earth and the things that are taking place out of the human race where that people are working through things. This Sunday, probably the largest celebration of anyone's life on this planet for this generation that will ever be, has been for most people, will be Nelson Mandela. I was listening to this and I'm captivated by that, the fact that one man could choose to dismiss the hatred. He admits the hatred was there. Nelson Mandela talks about hating, and when he stepped out of that prison, the comment that he made to himself that if he steps out of that prison and he still has hatred and revenge in his heart, he is still their prisoner. My gosh, that is so powerful. And then to carry out this thing that he did without revenge, without any of those things in his heart. But here's the thing that caught my attention that gives me such great hope. And that is they were recounting the times where, okay, like on Air Force One, there is a flight that is in process right now. They may be there already. But on board Air Force One right now is our current president and first lady and George W. Bush and Barbara is on board and Hillary Clinton is on board. And so they started talking, which that's like, you know, people that, well, these contradictions are incredible as to the political affiliations of these people. I mean, just think of all the things that Obama said about Bush and his administration while he was running for office. And Bush has not had to run against Obama, so he, you know, at least Obama's not having to put up with so much history of what Bush has said about him. But there's Hillary, who is on board also. They were talking about these flights to these funerals over the last few decades where presidents and former presidents, by going on these flights together, being trapped in this airplane, nobody could go anywhere. And most of them said it was the flight back where these political enemies forged friendships that have lasted the decades. Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush, on a flight similar to this, forged a relationship where that Barbara Bush calls Bill Clinton her other son. See, that to me, that's God in the earth. That's God in man. That's God in a Republican. That's God in a Democrat. Now, I know everybody who's out there who has strong political affiliations knows beyond the shadow of a doubt God cannot dwell in a Democrat, and all Democrats know God cannot dwell in a Republican. However, every time a Canadian says A, that's God manifesting himself in them.
Oh, my. Oh, man.
I'm on a trip right now. I'm seeing God everywhere. I'm having a blast, Spiros. According to the gospel, we believe that God is resident in all the human race. And then again, if that is true, can it be identified? Well, what I'm seeing right now is, yes, that it can. But, man, I tell you what, it really comes down to what we choose to focus on. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody on this planet is going to be able to be bosom buddies with each other. There are personalities that are just conflicting. But that doesn't mean that there has to be hatred or vengeance or any of those things that can be there.
Can we go there for a minute?
Sure.
How do you see God in someone who is so different from you that there's nothing even reasonable about these people? How do you see God in them?
Well, the fact of it is somebody does see God in them. I did a study a couple of decades ago on people who committed serial-type crimes, you know, indiscriminate crime, and why, you know, what was their common denominator amongst them. As despised as these people were, as much as you'd hear the comments in the courthouse, "I hope you burn in hell forever. Now you're going to get yours," which I totally understand. But then you see their elderly father or mother or whatever sitting there with tears in their eyes because they know somebody else that lives in them. And I remember particularly one of the most heinous crimes that's ever taken place in this country through a man by the name of Jeffrey Dahmer. I mean, the last name Dahmer is now like the name Hitler when it comes to those types of crimes. And but I watched them interview his father. His father was very aware of what his son did. He had no concept as to how this took place through his son. But the one thing that he always did was express how much he loved his son. And he never gave up on him. There was something that he saw in Jeffrey that we didn't see. Jeffrey was sentenced, but another inmate killed him in prison. I'm probably sounding very Pollyannish this morning. Of course, you know, it's 82 degrees. How can you not feel a little Pollyanna-ish when I'm, you know, I'm hurrying this up because I want to go to the beach. But I'm not trying to convey to you that everything really is okay on planet Earth, because it's not. There's terribly heinous things happening. But there is a view that I now have, just like when I realized this plane load of partisan political people are flying to and from, and realizing that over the years that these horrible, nasty things that are said between political parties, and they wind up eulogizing each other at their funerals and saying things that they found God in each other.
Maybe they're just plain more liars at funerals than anywhere else.
Had they not forged these wonderful friendships before, I think, yes, you could say that. But these are things that were forged long before that. And the relationship, like I say again, the relationship between Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush, I mean, these guys, I think it's possible that they experience a closeness in their relationship that maybe each of them don't have in most of the relationships that they have. And it's because there was conflict. It's because there's something to treasure more when something difficult has been worked out than there was when, you know, you're around people that agree with you all the time.
Well, the other thing is they knew each other at a higher level too. There is something you might say in the presidency of the United States, at least, and in the leadership of most countries, there is something about being lonely at the top. So they appreciated each other on an even different level than most people would encounter each other. And maybe we need to encounter each other at a higher level.
Wow, I couldn't have put it any better than that at all. And that's what the gospel is doing. I think that's what I'm experiencing is that I'm accepting that reality of God and man being one. And therefore, I am encountering people on a higher level. It really has been a wonderful experience to open myself to this reality. And I know nothing has changed. It's just that I have become aware of the potential that is there. I don't know about everybody else, but I am really judgmental when it comes to sizing someone up based on their appearance, based on the look on their face, on the way they dress, or any of those things.
Tell me, now that I've got this moment of honesty, what do you think of me?
Well, I overcame that, Barris, so it really doesn't make any difference what I thought of you. I've overcome all of those thoughts.
You're such a big man. I want to be like you when I grow up.
I want to be like me when I grow up, too.
Okay, now, can you remember where you were going, or did we rabbit hole that one totally?
I remember the very first time that I shared on the redemption of the world, and there was this explosion because I had literally sat on this for some time. And after I finished, I appealed to them to do a 1 week practice run. I said, okay, before we set aside a week to pretend that everybody around you is redeemed, everybody has been cleansed by the blood of Jesus. Regardless of who they are, where you see them, the prostitute on the corner, the cab driver with the turban around his head, which is very common in Canada, whatever the case might be. I said, okay, so how many of you won somebody to the Lord yesterday? How many of you won somebody to the Lord and you sat down and you shared the gospel and you joined hands with them and prayed the sinner's prayer in the last week? Not one hand went up. Okay, so I went back to a year and established that no one in that crowd had won anybody to the Lord in a year. So
now listen, mate, we got nothing else to talk about today, so just stretch this one out, okay?
No, I want to go to the beach. So I challenged them to consider this, and I said, well, now that we're fairly reasonably certain that if you haven't won somebody to the Lord in the last year, you're probably not going to do it this week. And they all sat, you know, with their head kind of hung down, saying, I guess probably not. So there's not going to be any harm in us carrying out this exercise. So we established that there would be no eternal harm would be done by these people pretending for a week that everyone that they met. Now, Barris, over the next few weeks, it may have even been months later that I was in contact with some of them, and they described to me what happened to them. See, and what we're trying to share here is that a perception change can be a whole change of life for you. Mm. Just a change of perception can be a change of life. In all of the cases that I heard back from, they all said there were walls and barriers that they had no clue they had up around people who weren't Christians, who weren't qualified, who didn't belong, believe, and behave, or even potentially didn't belong, believe, and behave. And their whole attitude toward them, they said, oh, I actually enjoyed talking to the taxi driver, you know, and the different situations. So, what we're appealing today, my appeal to everyone today is not a new one, but an expanded one of seeing God in those around you. Kind of expect it. Sometimes just an encounter, a quick encounter. If we can get past our judgments of appearance and the things that have been so instilled in us individually, and I'll guarantee you my judgments aren't yours and yours are not mine, but there's things that we are raised with that cause us to look at people in a prejudiced way, and those things can be seen past, and that's really what I'm experiencing more and more every day.
You say it's very hard. Flame.
down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Michael, did you ever hear about a documentary called A Class Divided? You might know it as Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes.
I think I heard of it. I don't believe that I saw it. Tell us about it.
I'm going to put it up on the website. Essentially, here's the story. Martin Luther King gets shot. The next day, a young teacher in Riceville, Iowa, I think it was, decides enough's enough, and she's going to teach the kids about racism. So what she does is she sews up these collars, these, you know, material collars, you know, red or blue or something, and she divides her class up on the basis of who has brown eyes and who has blue eyes. And it takes maybe 15 minutes for her to indoctrinate the children that brown-eyed kids are smarter than blue-eyed kids. Blue-eyed kids are obviously not so smart. One of their dads beat them up one day, so that's what a blue-eyed, you know, dad would do. But brown-eyed had none of them, you know, not in your life. By recess, she had these kids doubting, disputing, even bullying each other. They had to wear that collar for a whole day, and the next day she reversed it around, said, well, yesterday was just a practice, but here is the real thing. Brown-eyed people aren't smarter than blue-eyed people. Blue-eyed people are actually smarter than brown-eyed people. So take the collars off the brown-eyed people, put them on the blue-eyed people, and she played this experiment out for another 24 hours. These kids came back together after 14 years, and they interviewed this teacher. And the long and the short of it was this. She was able to instill separatism and all kinds of mental reservations about people and filters about people based on the color of their eyes, and she was actually teaching the lesson about skin color. And as they interviewed these children 14 years later, now as married adults, every single one of them said that this one 48-hour lesson had indelibly and permanently imprinted itself on their mind, and they were never the same again. Now, that was part one of this video, but it was in no way nearly as staggering and as improbable and as impossible to believe as part two was. Because in part two, she repeated the same process in front of the cameras with adults who'd never seen the experiment. She went into an upstate New York prison and did the same experiment over the course of about 4 hours with prison guards. The response, now you say, well, kids are just kids. The response was unbelievable, Michael. You could not believe the difference in these people that now started actually telling the other people that they were, well, they weren't very nice, but that's what brown-eyed people do. They weren't very intelligent, else they'd shut up and they'd listen to the lesson instead of having a problem with the fact that they were being put down because they were brown-eyed. I can't recommend to people enough. You will get the shock of your life.
My.
Not at how deeply our resentments are of each other, not at how deeply these separate these divisions between us run, but how fast we can take it on.
How easily they're developed, yes.
Now, if that's true, if it's easy to develop it.
Yes. It's going to be just as easy, if not easier, to destroy it, to erase those divisions.
Now, folks, if you want to watch that, and I just don't think any life should be complete without having watched this, go to topdocumentaryfilms.com/A-class-divided/. That would be www.topdocumentaryfilms.com/A-class-divided. Now, this was a Frontline documentary released in America through the public broadcasting system, the PBS. But if you just go and Google Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes, or the actual name of this movie, which is called A Class Divided, watch the whole thing. It's about 55 minutes long. And it'll change your life. I promise you, it will change the way you look at things. Back to you, Michael.
When we have those, when those prejudices are there, and they are in everyone, I don't know anyone that doesn't have their prejudices. It doesn't have to be about skin color. It can be on a whole different level. But when they and they are developed very easily. It doesn't take a whole lot, as you've pointed out, and I hope people do watch the video. I'm going to go watch it myself. But each family, each group, each unit, the people we're around, causes us to pick up those definitions based on outward appearance as to what people really are. And that in and of itself, Barris, is preventing us from seeing God in people who are around us. Whenever we get into those battles between the blue eye and the brown eye, it's our only resolve is not to obliterate the difference. It is to prove the person who's saying that wrong. No, it's the other way around. You know, no, it's and the ones who believe it's blue-eyed people are inferior are now in a battle with the ones who believe that brown-eyed people are inferior. And so then there's this lock into a battle about something that doesn't exist. And that's what we are facing on this planet. Most of the things that we're in strict battle with is about things that just simply do not exist. Our propensity to have the lines drawn and to never negotiate, never communicate with the other side at all costs. Yet we know that the only time that things have been resolved is through communication.
Well, according to Christianity, if anyone had the right to do that, it would have been God.
Yes.
And yet Isaiah 1:18 says, come let us reason together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty powerful. Now God dwells within. This is a very powerful thing that has happened to the human race. This week, as you go about your week, I really do encourage you guys, look, be aware of the God in the people that you're around. Be aware of the God that's in you. There is a way that God expresses himself in you. There are going to be people, though, who, because of their own insecurities and inferiorities and things like that, are going to probably, as they say, poo-poo the God in you, you know. They would say, well, who do you think you are, you know? Well, let me tell you who I think I am. This is a manifestation of God in the earth. That's who I am. And, yes, I may not act the way that everybody else does. I may not express myself the way that everyone else does. I may not be the one who can express it the best to everyone on earth, but this is God and Mike Williams. This is what this looks like, and it's looking better all the time, whether anybody can see it or not.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
As we embrace this reality, then there is a huge paradigm shift in our perception of life itself and what that now looks like. Christianity actually is the strongest antithesis to the gospel that exists on the earth. And I know that there's people saying, oh, what about Islam? What about Hinduism? What about Satanism? What about, you know, the list can go on and on. But I cannot find anything that is a stronger, true antithesis. I don't have any apologies for that anymore. For everyone who identifies with Christianity, we ask that you look at the doctrines of Christianity and look at the reality of the gospel. This gospel declares that that God and man is now one. Compare that to any Christian doctrine, from Catholicism to all the branches of Protestantism, whether it's Pentecostal or Baptist or Holiness or Methodist, whatever branch you might. And show me where there is a place where that the gospel agrees with Christianity.
Well, this week I was silly enough to put my foot in my mouth. Well, it wasn't really. It was both feet. And I posted on Facebook, you cannot learn if you hold your beliefs higher than Christ. Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, I did steal that from someone else, but I admired them enough to steal it at least. And I said further down in that post, I said that I feel confident in saying that if you took the top five things Jesus told us to do, you would not use them as earmarks of modern Christianity. And for the obverse, if one determined what the top five across-the-board agreed items constituted the most important modern Christian doctrines, one would fail to find them anywhere in the Bible. Someone said, you go, how about telling us what you mean? And I said, things that we don't see that Jesus said, the Holy Spirit being our teacher, we don't see that in modern Christianity, the pastor is a teacher, being known as Jesus' disciples by our love, being one, I pray that they'll be one as we're one, and I'm taking this from the Christian viewpoint, not from the Gospel Revolution viewpoint.
Yeah.
Clothing the naked, feeding the hungry, visiting the incarcerated, Matthew 25:41, and of course, the way Christians escape responsibility for this is they say, oh, that's not my calling. That's not my calling. My calling is, yeah. What a bunch of, it's not even sanctified BS. Then on the other, and not being able to serve God and money simultaneously. Just for starters. Then on the other side, as for major doctrines, how about baptism earns fellowship? That is what most religions believe. Asking Jesus into your heart? Nowhere found in the Bible. The rapture?
Yeah.
What a foreign concept of the Bible that is. Hell?
Yeah.
Easter? Or should I say Ashtar? Christmas? Or should I call it Saturnalia? That your favorite version of the Bible is being distinctly different from any other version of the Bible is the inerrant Word of God, and that the Word of God is even a book at all, for that matter. So that's how I answered it. But that goes to what you were just saying. Christianity, the astounding thing about Christianity is not that it does all of the things that makes people feel guilty and shamed and all. It's actually that people even respect the lies that are told, which are, I mean, just in this little short Facebook post.
Mm-hmm.
This is not rocket surgery, is it, mate?
No, I think you mixed your metaphors there too. So. Rocket surgery.
I'm sorry. You're right. Brain science. It's not brain science, is it?
I like rocket surgery. That's pretty good. That's a wonderfully mixed metaphor. oh, goodness. I'll never forget that one. But yes, we can take any subject. Take the subject of sin. What does Christianity say about sin? I don't care where you start, whether it's from the Pope or all the way to John Hagee in Texas, they're all still dealing with sin. They're all still having to confess sins, repent, repave, re-up, re-ante, redecorate, reconsecrate. I remember one preacher getting up and decades ago. He said that, you know, he had I think he was trying to share a little bit of grace with us, and he's talking about rededicating his life to the Lord. And he said, you know, he says, but I got to the point where my rededicator was worn out. You know, my rededicator wouldn't work anymore. You know? And I remember that.
There's nothing worse than getting up on a snowy morning and you go out to your car and the rededicator's gone dead on you. Damn, that's hard. That's
exactly right. And, you know, when your rededicator fails and the only thing that causes us the work is to the ability to rededicate. But see, the gospel declares that sin was destroyed 2,000 years ago, that the blood of Christ is better than the blood of a goat.
Gospel revolution.
You're going down. Well, you got the case of the blues. Why don't you listen to the gospel revolution.
When I look at this issue of just sin, that Jesus put away sin by the sacrifice of himself once and for all. That's compared to the blood of a goat, which lasted for 1 year. No confession of sins for an entire year. The blood of a goat satiated man's conscience and satiated God for one whole year. Barris, the only reason they had to confess sins once a year is because the sacrifice only lasted for a year. If the sacrifice had lasted any longer than a year, it would have been the amount of time that they would have never been conscious of sins anymore. The time of the effectual power of that lamb or the goat or the animal that was sacrificed, the effectual power of that ran out in 1 year.
Annual subscription price? One goat.
Yeah, exactly.
Annual daily price? One Jesus. What?
Yeah, moment by moment price. And even though the very same context says that he once and for all put away sin, can I find some consideration to give Christianity some credit for doing some good pertaining to the gospel? Oh my gosh, Barris, just the single issue of sin. Is there any way to dismiss the responsibility that Christianity has had for the last 2,000 years of completely and totally misrepresenting the sacrifice of Christ?
Well, yes, there is actually, and we are going to be revealing that in our newer and upcoming series, Deliver Me From Evil, which is going to be released on the face of the earth in January. Gosh, that's only a month away, mate. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, my goodness, yes, the teaching, Deliver Us From Evil. And that's going to be the conference coming up in Calgary, the weekend of the 25th of January. And I am both excited and I have some stuff going on about doing this, because I see this as so vitally important to understanding, you know, where we have come to with this issue of the gospel, is this understanding of good and evil. And I want to encourage everybody who can be there to participate. Help me get through this. We are I've committed myself to teaching this. I feel like that I understand about 10% of it, and of the 100% of it that needs to be taught in this one session. Not that all that is pertaining to this subject will be taught while I'm there, but if you took 100% of what I need to share while I'm there, to be clear, I think I got about 10% of it right now. So we need the prayer warriors out there.
Oh, the intercessors. Where are the intercessors?
Yes, bring us home. We've got some good things coming up. I also want to remind people that right now, normally we would be in pledge drive, but we are telling you, spend your money on Christmas. Enjoy your friends, your family, and I want us to start out the year with this pledge drive instead of end the year with this particular pledge drive. I really want us to be able to have a very strong start to the beginning of the year.
And you're ready for the beach, mate?
I'm ready for the beach.
And so it is that we – what beach?
It's a beach. I don't know.
Okay. Okay. And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank those who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at... Now, look, I had a new number here because Skype could not organize a raffle in a pub. Honest to goodness, they couldn't. Mate, I had the number too. Yeah, 1 2 3 4 5 6 5 6 and then 40971. They told me it was cancelled because I hadn't paid, and I said, "Well, I go into Skype and I can't pay. There's no option for me to pay. What are you talking about?" So I got a new number called 615-829-6597. That's area code 615-829-6597. That's my Google number, okay? And now I just checked my mail while you were talking about really, really deep and important things. I really was distracted. And I checked my email, and what do you know? They've just taken $30 out of my pay packet. Crikey. What a bunch of oxygen thieves Microsoft is, mate. I'm sorry. I know this is your show, but I am so enraged at these bunches of morons. I'm never going to forgive Bill Gates, mate. He might have God in him, but I ain't going to forgive him. Because it all ran okay when he was there, and then he up and left. And anyway, look, family.
Where is Billy when you need him?
Where is a good Gates Wingate when you need it? So you can try 234, area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel, all the time, is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from Nashville, Tennessee, where there's snow just blanketing the ground like great swathes of cotton wool. The sun is just bursting out of the sky. And if there's any part of winter in America where you don't have trees, all you got sticks, if there's any part of winter in America that I like, it's this. Say something about the beach.
And for Mike Williams here, I think this could be called this particular PowerCast could be called Sandals in the Sand.
Well, don't expect Jeff Robertson to name it that way, mate.
Jeff to pick up on
it. He's got a streak of creativity that runs counter to anything we suggest.
He's got his own labeler there, hasn't he? I mean, that's kind of been the whole topic. It's everything is beautiful, Sandals in the Sand broadcast, I suppose. God's in everything, everybody, the dog, the cat, and we've kind of presented a beautiful picture to you here today. So, but maybe that's just the sandals in the sand doctrine. Who knows? But we love you guys. Thank you so much. I am enjoying the beauty of South Florida. And got away. I drove down here. I was willing to do anything to get a little bit of a ray of sunshine, and it has been a very nice break. So we hope that this PowerCast has been enjoyable for you, and that you've gotten plenty enough out of it. I've loved it. It's been wonderful. It's kind of just a this is where we're at right now. This is what's happening and what's going on, rather than anything delving into anything. But please don't ever forget, folks, if there was only one subject that we ever examined and came to any right conclusion about, and that being the subject of sin, as compared to what Christianity has done with the subject of sin for the last 2,000 years, we would be wealthier people in every way possible with just the knowledge of that one thing. So enjoy yourselves, enjoy shopping, be safe, drive safe, give someone a Christmas smile, and thank you so much. We love you guys.
Do you remember when you looked back in your dream and you saw two sets of footprints, Michael, and then you only saw one set of footprints? Do you remember that?
Well, no.
Well, where it switched to one set of footprints, that's where you got too heavy for me and I just dumped you, mate.
Threw me in the ocean, yeah.
So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel.
We're going to do it all again, but this time, next time, I just bet it'll be...
longer?
Faster?
Better.
Better. Love you, Barris.
Love you, friend. Thanks very much, Mike. You enjoy the beach. And listen, if you go to the bathtub, you'll probably find your pushboat in there, mate.
Yes.
See ya.
I'm going to be looking for a pushboat the entire time I'm here.
See ya, fella.
Bye-bye.
Spread the religion. Spread the religion. Spread the religion of the rhythm of life.
Hello, this is Agneta Shix from Nakuru, Kenya, and I have a spoken word poem. And God said, let us make man, not in our own image and likeness, but a man who is one with us. Let him be righteous, holy, and complete, for we are one with him. We will no longer be called a trinity by the religious community, for we are all one. All men are included in this one man, and no man is excluded, regardless of the faith, belief, greed, or religion. All of this was consummated on the day of the Lord. The cross was the day of the Lord. On this day was the fulfillment of the law of the Psalms and the prophets, and the end of the world was at hand. The 10th week of Daniel was also fulfilled. The new world of the new creation was birthed on this day of the Lord. Well, what are you waiting for? Waiting for the end of the world, for the judgment of the world, for the second coming of the Messiah, for the fulfillment of the prophecy, for the destruction of the wicked, for the number 666 and the beast to be revealed? Well, I have shocking news for you. It all happened at the cross, on the day of the Lord. There's no more spiritual warfare, no more prayers and fasting and intercessions, no more tithing, sowing and reaping, no more seeking the Lord, no more knocking on doors to be opened, no more obedience needed, no more curses for disobedient, no more calling for the name of the Lord, no more hell to punish sinners and sins, and finally, there's no more confession of sin. And do you know why? Do you know why? It is because there's no more law. Once again, my name is Agnetha Sheets from Nakuru, Kenya. Blessed.